This is the Hockey News Podcast.
Hey, everybody. It's the Hockey News Podcast. Matt Larkin here with my buddies, Ken Campbell and Ryan Kennedy. And we have a lot to talk about. We truly have a lot to talk about today. It's no longer just theory. It's no longer predictions. It's no longer speculation on firings. There is a meaty trade that went down. I'm gonna read it out officially, just so you, if you haven't heard the exact details, listeners, here they are. Okay, so Colorado Avalanche get defenseman Samuel Girard, center Vladislav Kamenev, goalie Andrew Hammond, prospect Shane Bowers, a forward, conditional 2018 first round pick, 2018 second round pick, 2019 third. And to reiterate, this is for one guy, just for Matt Duchene. Nashville gets Kyle Turris. Ottawa gets Matt Duchene. So lots to discuss, lots to unpack. I know our readers have had a lot of questions over who we think won the deal. So I guess before we dive into each team, just what was your initial reaction, both you guys, and who do you think won the trade?
I think Colorado won the trade. I think Joe Sakic, he had to hit a home run here, and I think he put it into San Francisco Bay. It was, he waited, and everybody was wondering, when the heck is this guy going to make this trade? He's incompetent. He's, you know, he can't do this. He's alienated the player, blah, blah, blah. And then he comes out with a bucket full of picks and prospects. I mean, Samuel Girard, when Nashville picks a defenseman, I'm like, okay, he's good.
He's probably good.
He's going to be good because we know that they pick really good defensemen.
Let me guess, you can move the puck.
And they pick him beyond the first round. They picked this guy in the second round, and he had 3 points in his first game. And, I mean, he's been in and out of the lineup. I think he's only played 5 games. So, I mean, theoretically, he could play in the NHL this year for Colorado, I'm sure. I don't know what their plan is, whether they're going to send him back to junior or what they're going to do. But, I mean, you know, and then just the bounty of picks And I mean, you know, you were hearing some. I mean, the Kamenev guy has 8 points in 9 games in the AHL. You know, probably faced a bit of a logjam in Nashville. And you know, I mean, the other kid, the Boston University
Shane
kid,
Bowers.
Shane Bowers. I mean, he's a freshman at Boston University, doing okay. I mean, that's a hockey factory. Mm-hmm. I mean, I thought it was a great trade. I think everybody in this trade got what they needed, but I think Colorado. You know, given the fact that they were going to trade him, they had to trade him. Basically, they had to trade him because there was no going back and making up with this guy. You know, to have to be in that position and to get what they got, I thought was fantastic.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would agree with that assessment. I think when you're looking at Colorado's perspective, they weren't trying to get another Matt Duchene in this deal. They were trying to get a breadth of assets. And in Girard, you have a guy, as Ken said, that can probably play for you right now. Bowers, I would expect he spends at least 2 years at BU, so you won't see him next year, but maybe even the year after that. Right now he's playing on a line with Brady Tkachuk and Patrick Harper. It's a pretty dynamic line to begin with. Mm-hmm. Hypothetically, they could all be together next year as well, depending on how quickly Brady Tkachuk develops as a prospect. But, you know, I like where Bowers is at. He's a very sort of safe prospect in the sense that he has professional habits already. You know that he can fit in a lineup somewhere.
So you're a prospect guy, Brian.
Yeah.
Brian, is he in the same ballpark as a Colin White, or is he a poor man's Colin White? Is he a lowercase Colin White? What is he?
Well, I mean, that's interesting because their skill sets are different, but, you know, in Colin White, I also see a guy where, because of his speed and his smarts, he can do anything in the NHL you need him to. So, in a sense, that way, yeah, because Colin White to me is a pretty safe prospect if he's healthy, and that's what's held him back so far. With Shane Bowers, it's the same sort of thing where he's responsible in all three zones. He can get you offense. You know, he can play center. So even if you had to have him in a bottom six role early on, he could probably kill penalties for you. And he can be responsible in that sense. So that's kind of what I like in that way, is you're getting something tangible. And let's not forget, Colorado's leading scorer right now is Nathan MacKinnon, their number one center. Mm-hmm. They also have Tyson Jost, who's a young pro, is only going to get better. He's another center. And you know, that's how you're going to build a winning lineup is down the middle. So they've got two really nice scoring centers right now. Now they have Bowers in there. You get Girard. You got Cale Makar, their first round pick, fourth overall in 2017. He's at UMass right now.
Yep.
They've got the pieces. Goaltending, you find that anywhere when you need it, whenever.
Well, I mean,
they've got Varlamov.
I mean, he stopped, what, 60 shots the other
night
against Carolina?
Yeah, when Varlamov's healthy.
Yeah, sure. But, I mean, is he still going to be great 2-3 years from now? We don't know. But now, you know, with this trade, with all the picks, it seems like it's finally coming together for the Avs, where they've got options and they've got assets, and they're picking some really nice guys.
And if they, you know, I mean, by trading Matt Duchene and not getting a tangible, immediate asset back, they kind of enhance their chances of, you know, going down the crapper even more and getting Rasmus Dahlin.
That's right. And imagine you can build around Rasmus Dahlin and Cale Makar and Samuel Girard to get crazy mobility from the blue line, which would then make Tyson Barrie would then be expendable in
a
trade.
A
not bad. It moved, didn't it, Kim? And I think even down the middle, like Vladislav Kamenev, it's kind of like Nashville needed to fast forward him, so they fast forwarded him into Kyle Turris, because Kamenev's game, he's got that two way, like he plays a very pro style game.
Yeah.
At least when we were doing our research for Future Watch last year, our prospect special edition, that's sort of what the scouting, our scouting guys said about him, that he's got a two-way game. So he could be your future third-line center in Colorado behind the offensive guys. So you're starting to see the roster take shape. So it seems like we're all in consensus that Colorado got a ton. To me, like, I can't remember the last time one player got this big of a return since Eric Lindros. I mean, the return is not that big, but I mean, then again, it's not like anyone knew what Peter Forsberg was going to be.
Same team involved, too.
I know.
Same franchise,
right?
At least.
Yeah. So many pieces.
We want all your players.
That's right. That's right. But I'm curious what you guys think from the other team's perspective. I guess we'll start with Nashville. Like, to me, I rank Nashville as the loser of the deal if there has to be a loser. Because, you got Kyle Turris. He's a perfectly decent player. He's very versatile. He can play in all situations. You've signed him to a nice extension. But to me, it's like, is Kyle Turris not, I don't know, a rich man's Nick Bonino? And I think, do you just have three number two centers, or two number two centers with Ryan Johansson and Turris and Nick Bonino as your number three? Like, I don't know if this actually solves the Predators' long-term problem, which is getting that elite true number one puck distributing center.
Right. If those are the exact words you're going to use, no, it doesn't. But I think it helps. It gives them another bona fide guy who can win, who can big time win faceoffs, who seems to have a penchant for scoring pretty damn big goals, and can create a decent modicum of offense. To me, this trade is, in my opinion, an indictment of Ryan Johansson as a number one center, big time. You know, you don't trade Seth Jones for Ryan Johansson without thinking you're getting a number one center. You trade Seth Jones with the intention that you're going to lock up your number one center, role for the next 5 to 10 years, because of the very fact that Seth Jones is going to be playing for the next 15, and he's going to be really good. So you need to get a number one centerman out of that deal. David Poile did not get a number one centerman out of that deal. You know, Ryan Johansson has, I think, 22 goals in 138 games as a Nashville Predator. None this year. I really think that, you know, that trade, that Seth Jones trade, has come back to bite the Predators a little bit in that respect. I mean, they had defensive depth, but this is a real acknowledgement that they, you know, down the middle, what did they have? They had Johansson, they had Sissons, they had Frederick Gauthier, and
Bonino.
Yarncroc. And they're, you know, I mean, those guys have combined for like 18 points.
Yeah. And it's interesting that you say indictment of Johansson, because my first instinct was more that it's an indictment of Bonino as a number two, because they tried to shoehorn him in. He was a great number three in Pittsburgh, but to replace Mike Fisher, they tried to shoehorn Bonino into that role, and they paid him like a number two center. Mm. I remember actually writing about that day, saying this is a problem because you're paying number two center money for a number three center. So I looked at it more as trying to undo that mistake, but interesting theory about Johansson as well.
And let me posit this. The way I'm looking at it, I don't mind what Nashville did here, because I think this is a team that they're obviously built around defense and goaltending, and the offense comes largely from the defense. But like with Kyle Turris, I think he's kind of in the same situation he was in Ottawa, where he can be the 1B center to a 1A, not necessarily number one. What it enables Nashville to do, as you said, Matt, Nick Bonino is definitely a number three center, so that is now in its place. But maybe Kyle Turris finds some chemistry with, say, Kevin Fiala, and all of a sudden Nashville's offense isn't entirely reliant up front on Philip Forsberg and Victor Arvidsson.
Yeah.
So it gives you options up front where at least maybe you can create a little bit of a matchup problem some nights, and you can do some things, you know, when you're at home where you get the right guys on the ice at the right time. But it gives them a little more offense there. Maybe Ryan Johansson wakes up because there's somebody else there that can help out in different roles. And when you look at what Nashville gave up, if there's one team in the league that could part with a great young puck-moving defenseman, it's Nashville, because not only do they have a great bunch of them right now in the NHL, but they also have Dante Fabbro and David Ferentz, both at Boston University, ironically with Shane Bowers, who in just a couple short years will also be knocking on the door to being relevant, viable NHLers on that blue line.
Mm-hmm. And David Poile, he's always been a guy, he's the cowboy GM of the NHL, as we've said a lot. He's never afraid to look at a surplus on his team and trade from that position of strength, even if it means somewhat of an incremental gain, which I think is the case with Turris. The other interesting element here is that I know that they were experimenting, Peter Laviolette was experimenting with breaking up Arvidsson and Forsberg, and now you have a chance to have sort of two dangerous lines. You could go two pairs, right? You know, Johansson with Arvidsson, then Philip Forsberg with Kyle Turris, and suddenly there's two kind of it lines that are possibly tough to stop from scoring. So there is an interesting element there. I can see, to me, it does, everyone, like you said, Ken, everyone got what they wanted from the trade, and Nashville is better from the trade, yes, and Ottawa is technically better, but the problem from Ottawa's standpoint is, okay, so they're better if we accept that Duchesne is an upgrade over Turris, but how big is, of an upgrade is he, especially considering the fact that Ottawa also gave up Shane Bowers and a conditional first, et cetera, et cetera. Do you think Ottawa gained enough here, and should they have had to include Turris in this trade to get Duchesne?
Well, I think including Turris in this trade was part of the whole machinations of the trade. I think Ottawa was looking at the Turris situation and going, we're not going to re-sign this guy.
Yeah.
You know, and we're going to lose him for nothing at the end of the year. Because you can't, I mean, you can't trade Kyle Turris at the trade deadline when you're in first place in your division or second place and you're going for a Stanley Cup, right?
Yeah.
So now you've replaced Kyle Turris with an upgrade, in my opinion, a guy who's way faster than Kyle Turris, has way more speed, and you've got him for this year and next year, and you can start working with him this summer on an extension, right? You know, talking about getting the funny twitch going here, like, is anybody getting a little excited about the prospect of Matt Duchesne just driving through the neutral zone and Erik Karlsson laying pucks on his tape? Like, I think that's gonna be unbelievably explosive.
Mm-hmm. Ken is visibly excited right now, guys.
I think he's
sweating.
See, I think I'm not even acknowledging that comment. But anyways, I think where Matt Duchesne is going to have the problem is in adapting to Ottawa's system. Because it takes it's difficult to not try to score sometimes. You know, I mean, Bobby Ryan had a real tough time with that, and I think Matt Duchesne's going to have a bit of a difficult time with it too. But I like it from Ottawa's perspective. Number one, in the fact that they were going to lose Turris anyways. Number two, in the fact that they're clearly identifying that they are a very, very serious contender in the Eastern Conference, that they could win the Eastern Conference, and that they're going for it.
Yeah, I couldn't help thinking when this trade went down that Ottawa was looking at the Atlantic Division and saying, we could finish second in this division, no problem. Like, I still think Tampa Bay is a clear favorite, but I think they looked at what happened to Toronto on that recent road trip and say, like, you know what, the Leafs aren't that good.
No.
Not yet, at least. And
they beat the Leafs a couple weeks ago.
Yeah, and there's some softness there. And I had the same thoughts about Duchesne and the system. Like, is his speed going to help at all? Or is it just kind of going to go by the wayside because he's going to stand in the neutral zone?
Well, he'll jump on those loose pucks that they create.
Sure. Yeah. On the other hand, Duchesne has played for Team Canada internationally, which is a completely different system, but a structured one nonetheless. you know, played a fourth line role at the World Cup, and I thought he was pretty effective in that regard. He's won an Olympic gold medal, so he's teachable. We know that. You know, he's a smart hockey guy.
Yeah.
So I think that'll help a lot. Is he a big upgrade from Kyle Turris? I'm not really sure, but I think with the conditions as they are, and as you said, you know, with the Turris situation where he probably wasn't going to come back, where they were going to have a big contract impasse, I think Ottawa, you know, they did a nice move here.
And I like what you said about the teachability. And we know, based on the way Canada, Hockey Canada, has operated building those teams, that if you're not teachable, if you don't work within the system, you don't make the team. Right? Mm-hmm. That's been clear. There's a political element there. And the very fact that Duchesne made the team, it shows how they feel about his ability to learn. The other element that I find interesting Ken's coughing up his Coke. Probably all the aspartame.
No, I'm just thinking about aspartame. Last week when somebody said, Jesse Puljujarvi in a first-round pick for Matt Duchesne. Remember that? That was funny.
All right. We'll never know. We'll never know what could have happened. The other element, to directly change the subject, what excites me about the trade from Ottawa's standpoint is I agree. They're showing that they're a contender, but also Erik Karlsson, if I'm not mistaken, his contract is up after next season, and it's sending a message. So his contract should expire the same time that Duchesne's expires.
Yep.
So if they can get Duchesne locked up to an extension, it sort of sends a message that, you know, Eric, we want to keep you. We want to keep this going. We're not trying to just bomb out and lose you. We want to keep this team competitive for years to come because Duchesne's still young enough as well. So I feel like it's a way to send a message to Karlsson. The same way Montreal, I think, was trying to send a message to Carey Price by signing Carl Alner.
I would also point out for Ottawa, if you look long term, you have Logan Brown, another very good center coming up.
Yeah.
And you also have Thomas Chabot working his way up, and then Colin White as well. But you have potential number one center, and on a lot of teams, Thomas Chabot could be a number one defenseman. He's not going to be number one in Ottawa as long as they have Erik Karlsson, but you're getting a great puck-moving defender with size, and you're getting a really big center who is very offensively inclined and pretty smart as well in Logan Brown. So the future's looking nice for Ottawa. So they are the sort of team that can give up some assets because they've hit on picks in a nice way.
Mm-hmm. Good. Another Canadian team, to switch off the trade for now, another Canadian team we haven't talked about a ton on this podcast because we probably just didn't think they were that relevant is the Vancouver Canucks. And they're staying in the hunt.
Did you say Canucks?
I don't know. Did I say Canucks?
Sounds like you said Canucks.
Maybe I was talking about Chinook Winds. Anyways, that's a Canadian joke. Sorry, American listeners. But the Canucks have been pretty relevant so far. They're pretty competitive. The Sedins are only playing like 13, 14 minutes a night.
Mm-hmm.
Brock Besser's been great, and Bo Horvat's sort of taken over as that number one guy. Do you guys believe that this is a team that might be a little bit ahead of schedule, or is this just one of those cute little stories where they, in a small sample size, they do well, and then they kind of just regress, and they're going to miss the playoffs again, et cetera, et cetera?
Well, yes, I do believe that they're ahead of schedule, as we would say in Canada. But they may not make the playoffs, but I think it's coming together a lot better than anyone ever thought, and I give a lot of credit to Dallas Green. Why would I say Dallas
Green?
Green?
I can't believe Ken Travis knows who Green. Dallas Green is. City and color.
I think the problem is that he doesn't know.
He was a baseball manager, Dallas
Green.
Oh,
never mind.
Anyways, I give a lot of credit to Travis Green on this. You know, I talked to him. They were in Buffalo. Vancouver's in Buffalo. And absolutely dummied them one night. It was unbelievable a couple of weeks ago. And, you know, he said, I'm coaching the game. I'm coaching the way the game is going. And that was his, you know, justification for cutting back on the Sedins' ice time. And I think with the Sedins, you've got to have two guys that are mature enough and smart enough to be able to realize that there's got to be a transition here. And, you know, it's not exactly the Montreal Canadiens, you know, to you from failing hands, we pass the torch. But you know, I mean, the torch is being passed. And I think these guys are as good or better than we thought. I think Brock Besser is... you know, a guy that has pushed the pace there, pushed, you know, I mean, he was a healthy scratch for the first game, or wasn't he, or something?
I believe so.
Yeah. And now look what he's doing, you know, and I mean, I think it's a team that is being very well coached by a very, very good coach who knows how to deploy his team and is using four lines. And, you know, I mean, I whether they make the playoffs or not, I think is, you know, it's neither here nor there. They might make it, they might just miss, but I think they are for real.
I think the big question with Vancouver is, can their goaltending continue to be as good as it has been so far? Mm-hmm. I'm not too sure about that. Like, Anders Nielsen has a sub 2.0 goals against average right now, and Jacob Markstrom's not that far behind. I think that's probably going to bump up as the year goes on, but it's nice, and I agree. You know, Travis Green has come in and put his stamp on the organization, and I think we've seen that a lot with first-year coaches. And it's very positive for Vancouver, and they do have some nice young elements, and it's kids that they're going to have to depend on in the coming years. And we haven't seen the full complement yet, because we haven't really seen Nikolai Goldobin. He's been in Utica, and Elias Pettersson has been destroying the SHL.
Just going bananas.
Yeah, so, I mean, I don't know if you see him next year or the year after. It depends on how Vancouver wants to work it, but this is the beginning for Vancouver, and I think even just being competitive and hanging around a playoff spot will have some nice long-term ramifications for them.
It's true, because, I mean, you learn how to win and you learn how to lose, and I think that if a young player is in a situation where there's some hope and that, I mean, yeah, okay, so you don't bottom out and you don't do it that way, but I think there's a lot to be gained from, you know, I mean, Brock Besser's going to be so much better if he gets into a playoff series this year and learns what the playoffs are all about. So the Canucks get swept or whatever it is that happens. But those are good experiences for young players.
And it's funny, because I talked to Trevor Linden about it in the summer, and he sort of foreshadowed. He said he knows they're rebuilding, but he also wants to put a competitive product on the ice. They're hoping for sort of a hybrid where the young kids, and some of the young kids, but not all the young kids, are getting playing time at the same time, sort of an apprenticeship. And I think you're seeing that. And it's interesting, because the Sedins, maybe it's a little bit of them is going a long way. I was looking at the possession numbers, individual possession numbers, and they are first in the entire league. Henrik and Daniel, 5-on-5 Corsi, a couple days ago, ahead of Patrice Bergeron. Yeah, they're the top two in the entire league the last time I looked. Yeah. So they've been dominant, and maybe just they're fresher. I don't know. They're being used
I think there's something proper to that. Way. I definitely think there's something to that. They're also playing against largely against third and fourth line players.
Yeah, and maybe that's a great way to use them.
That's part of it too, yeah.
Yeah, and I think you're seeing a trend. I mean, you saw this with John Cooper when he came into Tampa Bay, and Mike Sullivan in Pittsburgh, where a guy joins a team after having started in the AHL, and a lot of the young players on the team already came up with him, and they already have a familiarity with him, and it seems to be there's sort of a synergy when the coach comes up. So maybe we're seeing that with Travis Green. Another Canadian team that's looking pretty good so far is Winnipeg. And it's funny, the Jets, they have so much talent at forward, and we've been waiting for years for the goaltending to finally catch up. And ironically, the goaltending's been great so far this year. The scoring has been on and off. Scheifele's been very good. Patrick Laine has been down on himself. Yeah. And this is a team I still can't figure out, because it's Connor Hellebuyck, who's been phenomenal so far, yet they signed Steve Mason to be the starter. And if you look at the possession numbers and the PDO, the puck luck, all those numbers suggest that the Jets are terrible. And they're like 29th last I looked in Corsi. So that suggests this team is actually going to fall, and that it's completely reliant on, of all things, goaltending. Yeah. I don't know. Do you guys trust them or what?
I do, because I think that what you alluded to, I think that was the one sort of wild card that we thought with this team, that was the one thing holding it back, was goaltending. And we talked about it, I think, in the first podcast of the year with when Edward was hosting, and I remember he said, well, we're not going to take the Jets seriously. And I was like, why not? Why wouldn't we take them seriously? You know, they've got some talent on this team. Mm-hmm. I think that the Jets are for real. And as long as their goaltending holds up, I think, you know, I think that other stuff is actually going to improve. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, Patrick Laine is starting to pick it up. He's starting to play a lot better. You know, I think Ehlers, you know, Wheeler and Scheifele have been
huge line.
Tremendous this year. I mean, Scheifele's been lights out.
Yeah.
And their defense core is right there. I don't see a lot of holes in this lineup.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
If their goaltending holds up.
Yeah, and I think with the Steve Mason signing, maybe I'm just kind of cynical, but I always looked at it as, like, there's the guy that's going to take the bullets so that Hellebuyck can grow and so Hellebuyck can take that job. And that's kind of what happened. Winnipeg, they didn't get off to a good start. They didn't look good. Mason wasn't playing well. But it allowed Hellebuyck to have a bit of cover as he came into his own, and he has come into his own. Last year it was too early for Hellebuyck, and I mean, that's how goaltending happens, you know? Mm-hmm. Like, you don't come in as an 18-year-old and blow the world away. You need to get those reps. You need to figure things out at the NHL level, and I think he's there now. And in Mason, you have a guy who I would say, you know, he's had huge ups and downs in his career. I think he's probably a pretty good dressing room mate for Hellebuck to have, because he can be like, hey, I've been there. Like, when I'm a Calder winner, I've been, you know, traded out of markets and left for dead, but, like, you know, you just got to keep with it and whatever goalies tell each other. And I think what we're seeing now is this is who Connor Hellebuck was supposed to be, and this is who he is.
Mm-hmm. That's right. And Hellebuck was a grade A prospect. He had been coming up, and he's got great size, got great swagger. And we've talked about it a lot in the office before, that he's kind of followed that John Gibson career path where he was so good that he was starting for Team USA in the World Championship before he was an NHLer.
Yeah.
And I interviewed Blake Wheeler about a month ago, and he was very candid about how unhappy he was with the goaltending. He wasn't afraid to say it. He said, we weren't good enough. And he said, I was really happy when I found out about the signing. No disrespect to Connor Hellebuck, but he needs to be pushed by a veteran. And so far, that's exactly what's happened, and it's brought the best out of Hellebuck. And that's the thing. I don't think Hellebuck, yes, he's not going to have a .950 save percentage, but he might have a .930. He's got that kind of talent. Mm-hmm. He's one of the best goaltending prospects in the game, and he has been for a few years. So it wouldn't be unheard of for him to emerge as a true number one, especially when we've been predicting that for several years, that he's going to be a star. So you never know. Time for a few reader questions. This one is from Jake LaHoute. Hopefully I said your name right, Jake LaHoute. Beyond Red Wing contract issues, which philosophical vision is impeding them the most? Jeff Blashill's or Ken Holland's?
Really? Do I have to?
Oh, Ken doesn't want to talk about his buddy Ken Holland. Ken Campbell and Ken Holland are buddies. They're buddies. They like each other.
No, I have a lot of respect for Ken Holland. I'm not going to lie about that.
You want to plead the fifth on this one? I'll do it for you.
I live in Canada. I can't plead the fifth. We don't have it. We don't have a Fifth Amendment.
We don't have a Second Amendment
Ken,
either.
Ken has signed some players to some deals that are actually, you know, not serving them real well at the moment. I worry about their defense. I don't think it's going to get any better in the next little while. Jeff Blashill, when he took over as the Detroit Red Wings coach, he said, I need to have the best team that I can put on the ice. And that team includes Dylan Larkin as a rookie. And he went to bat for Dylan Larkin and said, look, I'm a rookie coach in this league. You want to win, you got to give me the best team and give me a chance to win. And that's how Dylan Larkin ended up being in that lineup right from the get-go. So I think Ken's a really smart guy. I think Ken Holland is a really bright guy. I think he's owed the chance to be able to make this right, and I think he can do it.
Mm. Yeah, I think that the Wings are in a tough spot because of some of those contracts, but the fact that Dylan Larkin has rebounded from that awful sophomore slump, I think is huge news for them, because if Dylan Larkin can be your top line center in a couple of years, then all of a sudden a lot of other pieces fall into place, where you have a really nice big scoring winger in Anthony Mantha, you have a pretty creative kid in Andreas Athanasiou, you also have a two-way center in Michael Rasmussen that you drafted, that a lot of people were down on that pick because they saw a bit of a low ceiling with the 6'5" kid, wordplay. But if Dylan Larkin's your number one center, then Michael Rasmussen doesn't have to be your number one center. If he's only your second line center, that's cool. If he's an amazing third line center, then I think that's okay as well, depending on what he can do in that role. So I don't see much on the back end right now. You know, you like Dennis Chalewski.
He's a ways away.
He's a ways away. Yeah. I don't think they were very happy that he left the NCAA to play junior hockey. I don't think they would have preferred that.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But that was the decision that Chalewski made. And, you know, the next couple of years, we'll have to see, you know, where he goes from there. But they've still got some work to do in the draft. It's not going to be a great next couple of years.
Yeah.
But I don't think it's a disaster right now, other than the fact that you do have some contracts that you're going to have to figure out what to do with.
Yeah, I look at that defense, and I just think it's going to get worse before it gets better. That's
yeah.
Because Mike Green, there's no motivation for Mike Green to re-sign if he wants to chase a Stanley Cup, right, as a UFA.
No.
Yeah.
Right, exactly.
And to me, it's not that Holland is doing a bad job right this second. It's that he's being punished for his sins of the past few seasons. So when the playoff streak was at 22, 23 years, he started to enter that bubble mode. And I talked to him about it the summer before, and he admitted. He said, I'm not going down without a fight. And he's signing your Franz Nielsens of the world, handing out big money to Darren Helm. Yeah. And it's not just bad contracts. It's bad contracts that are long-term and impossible to move. So he sort of saddled himself with these players who are still good enough to be NHLers and keep the team from completely bottoming out. They're not good enough to make the team playoff caliber.
Right, right.
They're not attractive enough to be traded. So I feel like Detroit's going to have to soldier on in the same state, state for a few more years, and then finally they can bottom out if they want to.
Well, and that's a good point that you brought up, Matt. Like with Detroit, you know, it was like the 25 years, you got to keep the playoff thing going. Okay, so finally, okay, we're out from under that playoff thing. Ugh. Moving into a new arena. Okay.
yeah, exactly.
Yeah,
I better sign Trevor Daly.
We can't be horseshit in our first year in a new arena.
Right.
So, you know, it's sort of the cycle continues, right?
Yeah.
Is there an Abdelkader Island?
There should be. There should be. Yeah, it's called Team USA in the World Cup.
Hey.
Hey-o.
Actually, I watched them. They beat somebody 4-0 yesterday. Who was it?
I don't know.
They won 4-0. Abdelkader was actually pretty good. Yeah.
Cool story, bro.
Good for him. Anthony Mantha was better.
Yeah, I can imagine. Aaron Goldschmidt says, I know it's early, but can Corey Crawford win a Vezina this year? He's carrying the Blackhawks right now. I'll jump out first on this one. Here's the thing about Corey Crawford. One of the reasons why he's never been able to win the Vezina is that he doesn't play as many games as your average bona fide big-time bell cow starter.
Mm-hmm.
But right now, the last time I checked, Crawford was actually leading the league in games played. So if this trend keeps up and Crawford does have a workload this big, then he is a Vezina contender because he can actually put up the numbers and the volume, and I think he's leading the league in goals against average and shutouts right now too, on top of games. So if the usage continues like this, and Scott Darling's gone, so maybe the Hawks don't feel like they have the same safety net, then maybe Crawford does contend for the Vezina for the first time. I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, the goal Montreal scored yesterday, their first goal, like there was some crazy shutout streak that he had going before that, right?
I think so.
And he only gave up two yesterday. So, yeah, I mean, you're right. And that was the same thing with Billy Smith. I talked to Billy Smith about this once, and he was like, if I have one regret in my career, it's that I didn't insist on playing more games. Because him and Chico Resch used to platoon, basically, during the regular season. But then once the playoffs started, it was like, yeah, it's your net. Take it and go win the Conn Smythe Trophy, right? And he never won a Vezina because of that.
Mm.
And, I think you're right. And I mean, Crawford is a goalie who has a lot of talent. He's not like a conventional kind of goalie in sort of the true sense of the word. And I don't know if that hurts him, but yeah, I mean, the numbers he's putting up this year and the way he's playing, yeah, absolutely.
I think another thing to consider is that things are kind of clearing the way for him, where Carey Price is having an abominable season by anybody's metrics, not just the high standards of Carey Price. Looking at the leaders, you know, Jonathan Quick is up there, and great bounce back season for him. The Kings are
absolutely
pretty good, so that would be a candidate. You know, Pekka Rinne is doing pretty well too.
Nice bounce back season for him.
Now I wonder, you know, when it comes to the voting, do people look at the Kings and Preds and say, like, well, those are two pretty defensively staunch teams, whereas, you know, the Hawks lost a ton of talent on their blue line core, and maybe what Crawford is doing is it's sort of a higher degree of difficulty.
Mm-hmm.
Those are some of the names. And, you know, Bobrovsky's numbers are pretty good, as always. So that would be another level of competition for him.
I think Vasilevsky is probably the guy right now, isn't he?
Based on the wins, the rate stats aren't quite as good as Crawford's or Quick's, but
right.
Vasilevsky's,
yeah.
I think didn't he tie a record or set a record for most wins in October like that.
Yeah.
But great point about Crawford in terms of how much Chicago needs him this year, and just with that defense depleted. And they're kind of bouncing around above 500, but what's their record without Crawford? I shudder to think about it. Time for one more question. This one's from Diesel, just Diesel. It's the guy's name, or gal. I'm hoping it's Kevin Nash, wrestling fans. How is Daryl Sutter not employed? You listening, New York Rangers? That's Diesel talking. He said that. I don't know. I mean, when a guy loses his job and the players, such as Drew Doughty in the interview he did with me for our magazine, are so vocal about the problems they had with that coach, yeah. I feel like there's at least a temporary odor on that coach. He's not going to get a new job right away after missing the playoffs twice in 3 years. And, you know, Doughty, the Kings, being pretty open about the fact they found him not very approachable.
Yep.
I don't know. Am I wrong on that? What do you guys
think? No, I think you're bang on. I think Daryl Sutter's a very polarizing coach. I think he rubs a lot of people the wrong way. And I think that odor or whatever you called it is still with him. And like, okay, so when you hire Daryl Sutter, you're hiring him because your team's become a country club, mm-hmm. and no one cares, and the coach has lost the room and all that other crap that we hear, right? I don't get that sense with the New York Rangers that it's a country club, that, you know, there's a bunch of fat cats around there that you know, are just lazing their way through everything here. So I'm not sure that bringing a Daryl Sutter in to a situation like New York would be really all that productive.
Yeah.
I think you bring Daryl Sutter into a team that has, you know, wildly underachieved over the last couple of years, has a lot of talent, and really hasn't been able to put it together and needs someone to whip them into shape. And then he does that, and he keeps his job for 4 or 5 years, and then that act grows thin, and he's on his way.
Are you saying he's going to Edmonton?
That's not bad. That's almost as good as Puljujarvi.
Yeah, no, but, I mean, in all seriousness, yeah.
Nice.
I think the other problem with Sutter is that he was pitching a form of hockey that is no longer relevant
right.
in Los Angeles. It's a young game, it's a fast game, and that's the antithesis of what he was preaching in LA. And I can't see an organization saying like, yeah, we need to get slower out there. It just right now, it doesn't make any sense.
Yeah.
I think if he wants to keep coaching at the, you know, at a high level, maybe he goes to a junior team and, you know, does something there where you can take a different approach. Maybe he figures
two-time Stanley Cup winner goes back to junior hockey and rides buses.
Either that,
it would have to be Red Deer, wouldn't it?
He probably just hangs out on his farm.
Dale Hunter did it.
That's true.
He went back to London to say it.
Yeah. I think Sutter.
But he never wanted to leave.
You don't think? I thought he wanted to leave.
No, Dale Hunter never wanted to leave. They enticed him in Washington to come and
play. Oh, yeah. No, we're agreeing. Yeah. I thought you meant never wanted to leave Washington. Never wanted to leave London. Yes, I agree.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying, yeah.
They threw a net over him. Dragged him to Washington. I think he's just going to be a farmer now.
And he's going to be real happy with it.
Awesome. Okay, we're gonna end it on Daryl Sutter, the farmer.
He loves it, man. I've heard the story that he used to read like John Deere catalogs on the team bus. And he'd be like, oh, that's a good one.
Yeah. That's awesome.
The 07s are out.
Okay, well, Daryl, hopefully you're listening to this while you're riding your tractor. Okay, and we'll be back next week, everybody. Thanks.